The map is laid out in squares, numbered 1 to 14 horizontally and A to L vertically, each measured in steps, so that someone can see in a glance how many he'll have to take to get from one place to another. De Fer was offering, in effect, a combined map and guidebook for tourists on foot, and in 1694 he published a small format map, 9 by 12 inches, that was easily carried about in one's pocket. This detail from that 1694 map shows how convenient it would have been for exploring the new Champs-Élysées neighborhood, just then becoming part of the fabric of Paris. No one saw the potential of de Fer's innovations more clearly than Brice. Hence his decision to reissue his own guide in 1698 with a fold-out map and a listing in alphabetical order of the streets of the city. There had been earlier books about Paris. Father Jacques Dubreuil's 1612 work on its antiquities, for example. But these volumes, like works such as Andrea Palladio's 1554 introductions to ancient Roman monuments and medieval pilgrimage churches, were destined for visitors who measured a city's greatness by its history, and they focus on civic and religious monuments. John Stowe's 1598, A Survey of London, and Thomas DeLaune's 1681, The Present State of London, also have an antiquarian slant. They evoke modern-day London mainly as a center of commerce and the nation's financial hub. In contrast, guidebooks to Paris present a city bristling with creative energy, a cultural magnet, an incubator of the kind of ideas that could revolutionize urban life. Recent research indicates that once a city acquires a reputation as an exciting place or as one where nothing ever happens, that image tends to survive unchanged for long periods of time. The original guidebooks to Paris help explain how one of the most powerful urban images of all time was put into place. Both Brice and de Fer had the same idea of why modern tourists might choose to visit a city. In Brice's opinion, visitors no longer wanted detailed historical information. Visitors now preferred a guidebook that included an account of the latest trends in modern residential architecture, rather than the translation of Latin epitaphs in a cemetery. Thus, Brice, like de Fer, included recent architectural achievements, both private homes and innovative public works such as avenues, that in the course of the 17th century had become central to the experience of Paris. What attracts visitors to a city? A guidebook such as Brice's, a map such as de Fer's, and other novel publications that were introduced in the 1690s all offered new answers to that question. Take the example of Nicolas de Bligny's volumes from the early 1690s, the first ever Insider's Guide to a City, in Adresses de la Ville de Paris and Le Livre Commode, Addresses in the City of Paris, and The Useful Book. Bligny includes information never before considered noteworthy, such as where to find the best brie cheese or the most buttery brioches, the names of tailors who outfitted court notables, the addresses of caterers for your special events, and the right source for every kind of luxury merchandise. All these publications indicate that a new model for the city had been put into place in the course of the 17th century. According to that model, a great city should be more than a collection of major buildings or a monumental capital. A city was worthy of a visit because it was great in the here and now, because of its contemporary architecture, because its economic life, its cultural activities, and the range of entertainments it offered made it vibrant. Visitors who wanted to contemplate ancient monuments still went to Rome, but those in search of the novel and the cutting edge, in the arts and architecture, in technology and commerce, in fashion, and in cuisine, were traveling to Paris to discover a very different experience, and they were doing so in new ways. They walked its streets with Brice's guidebook in hand, as English physician Martin Lister did in 1698, and as Louis Ligère was still advising readers of his guidebook to do in 1714. They spent less time in churches and more in cafes and public gardens, less time touring cemeteries and more visiting shops. They wanted to eat well and be well outfitted, as much as to tour a famous cathedral. Paris has not always been a magnet for visitors. During the second half of the 16th century, France had been ravaged by decades of war between Catholics and Protestants. By the century's end, its capital had been reduced to a state succinctly summed up by the first great historian of the city's development, Michel Philibien. In 1597, there was nothing splendid about Paris. It was in deplorable shape and lacked